Miff Warhurst.
Weekdays on ABC Radio, online and on the ABC Listen app.
No matter where you come from, it turns out you don't smell too good. True story. Apparently, our culture and our language shapes the way we perceive not just smells, but lots of other things too. Asfa Majid is a psychology professor at the University of York, and she's been looking into the impact of culture on our auditory and visual senses. Asfa, thanks for joining me.
Nice to join you.
What led you to this research?
So there's been a long-standing idea that what matters most for humans is our vision and our ability to hear, but other senses like smell and taste aren't so important. So this has influenced much of science today, including how neuroscientists think of our senses. So we know that there's much more brain devoted to processing visual signals than there is for processing smell. So many different pieces of evidence seem to suggest that there's this asymmetry between the senses. So we wondered whether the same was true for language, as might be presumed. And so to test that, we studied 20 different cultures. We chose communities that were quite different from one another. So speakers of English one side, and then people living a more traditional lifestyle, kind of small-scale farmers or even hunter-gatherers. And we compared all of these communities and their ability to talk about the different senses. And when we did that, we found that actually there wasn't a single dominant sense, but that cultures differed in which sense they had most ease in talking about.
So why do we think smell and taste aren't as important?
That's a great question. Partly to do with the neuroanatomy, so the part of the brain in humans that's dedicated to smelling is much smaller than the part of the brain that's dedicated to visual processing. So that's one piece of evidence. So we know, for example, that the part of the olfactory cortex seems not to have grown at the same rate as other parts of the brain. And so this led some people to suggest that whereas smell is very important for animals like rats and dogs, it might not be important for humans anymore because we've become more rational. And part of that rationality is relying more on visual information than things like smell.
So does the way we perceive vary widely depending on our culture?
I think the fundamental question is whether some senses are more reliable or more accessible to consciousness than others. And it seems that in Western thought, people have considered vision and audition, our sense of hearing, to be much more objective than the other senses. So we get our knowledge and understanding comes from vision and audition, whereas touch, taste and smell are thought to be crude and not really give us a lot of information. And if that's true, then that predicts that humans ought to be much better at communicating about sight and hearing than they are about communicating about the other senses. So that's essentially what we tried to test in this study.
So you looked at culture and language, and how does language shape the way we perceive?
There's evidence that things that are easy to talk about are also easy to remember, and that if we make distinctions in language, for example, in Russian, there's a distinction made between light blue and dark blue. There's distinct words for it. Whereas in English, many different hues are just called under a single word, blue. But if you make a lexical distinction between these two words, that you're better at perceiving distinctions in that range. So both for memory and perception, the way that we talk about the senses seems to matter.
So how would an English speaker perceive the world differently to, say, speakers of other language? And can you give me some more examples? You sort of mentioned it then with Russia.
My own work has looked at how people talk about smell. So this is interesting because it's a place where English seems to do quite poorly. So when people talk about smells in English, they often refer to the source. They say something smells like roses or smells like chocolate, but there doesn't seem to be a dedicated vocabulary for it in the same way there is to talk about colours. So we have distinct words, red, green, blue, that pick out distinct qualities of colour. But that kind of vocabulary seems to be missing in English. However, if you go to a different part of the world, into the Malay Peninsula, you'll find a group called the Johai. They're a hunter-gatherer community that live in the tropical rainforest. And the Johai differ from English in that they do seem to have dedicated vocabulary for talking about different qualities of smells. So in Johai, the word latput is used for fragrant sorts of smells, so flowers, soap, a bear cat that smells a bit like popcorn. But latput is different than the smell jungos, which is also used for fragrant sorts of smells, but these are kind of more tasty, more edibly fragrant sorts of things. And that differs from baus, which is used for smells that have been, that are maybe a bit musty. So cooked cabbage, some species of mushroom, some species of centipede. So these words, there's around a dozen or so of them, pick out different qualities of smells, just like English colour words that pick out different qualities of colour.
Okay, so does that mean if they have more words for smells, does that mean that they have a better sense of smell then?
That does seem to be an intriguing possibility. So we don't know that directly. We haven't tested the sense of smell. There are other studies that show that there is considerable cross-cultural variation, though. So if you live in a big city and you are being bombarded with odor pollution in the form of car pollution and other kind of city living pollution, then your sense of smell is worse than if you live in a tropical rainforest or on Cook Island, where there isn't really traffic. So we do know that the sorts of experiences that you have, the environment that you live in, can affect your sense of smell.
I'm speaking with Asfa Majid, a psychology professor at the University of York, about the research into sensory perception and culture. What about cultures that use sign language? What impact does that have on sensory perception?
In a recent study, we've looked at how different communities talk about the senses, including diverse sign languages. So there isn't just one sign language. There's a number of different sign languages across the world. In our study, we focused on three of them. So American Sign Language, British Sign Language, and Katakalok, which is a village sign used in Bali. We compared these three sign languages to 17 different spoken languages, also sampled from across the world. And for all of these languages, we compared how people talked about colours, textures, tastes, smells and sounds, apart from the sign languages, where obviously the deaf participants couldn't hear the sounds. But what we found was that there wasn't a single way that all sign languages had to talk about the senses. So sign languages differed from one another, just like the spoken languages did.
How did you do this research, and how many cultures did you research?
We tested 20 different cultures, and that was only possible because of an amazing collaboration of various field workers. So people who had been studying these languages for a very long time, often documenting languages that had never been written before. So all of the researchers took a standardized set of stimuli to the field with them. So colours that were Munsell colours, so they're standardized hues. We also looked at how communities talked about shapes. So we took geometric shapes like squares and circles to the field. For sounds, we took tones that varied in pitch, loudness and tempo. For textures, we had rough and smooth sorts of textures. For taste, we looked at sweet, sour, salty, bitter and umami, the basic tastes. And for smells, we took a standardised set of odours that were micro-encapsulated odours. So these are scratch and sniff smells. So that the same ones were taken to these 20 different locations. So all of the researchers took the same battery of stimuli and then asked speakers in their native languages to describe each of the stimuli. And when they came back from the field, they transcribed everything and then we coded everything to see how much agreement there was between speakers in a single language and how they talked about that sense. So the idea here is that the more something is cognitively accessible or easy to talk about, the more that tells us how important that is in that community.
Right.
So we were able to operationalize that, we were able to measure that in the same way across all of these cultures. And when we did that, we found that there was considerable diversity across the languages in which senses was most easy to talk about.
What were English speakers better at and what were they worse at identifying?
So they were pretty bad at being able to identify the smells, even though they were familiar to the English speakers in this sample. But they were pretty good at talking about visual things like shapes and colours, as has been predicted by scholars over the centuries. So
yeah.
This is what Aristotle would have predicted as well.
Okay, so we're English speakers are bad at smelling or bad at describing smells?
Bad at describing smells.
Right, okay. So it's not about whether or not we can smell. It's just that we don't rate it as highly in terms of the work that we put into explaining it.
Yes, so it seems to be smells we know are important for our behaviour, but it doesn't seem to be something that we consciously think about very much. And part of that's reflected in the fact that we seem to have a hard time talking about it.
Yeah.
So even with these familiar odours, English speakers find it really hard to name them.
What do you reckon it says about English speakers culturally? Are we uncomfortable talking about smells?
Well, Freud certainly said that repression of smell was an important factor in civilization. And anthropologists have speculated that kind of deodorizing our environments was a hallmark of modern society. So it's certainly not good to have inappropriate smells in locations. And we do spend a lot of money deodorizing ourselves and our environments. So it is a bit of a puzzle, isn't it? Because our appreciation of food and our social relationships and definitely smell is important in being able to identify hazards like fire. All of these things show that it's important, and yet it's still something that we don't seem to talk about very much, and we don't have dedicated means to do so.
This is really interesting. So we are all born with the same capabilities of perception. They just get exercised in different ways depending on where we're born?
That seems to be the case, yeah. So if you were a Farsi speaker from Iran instead of an English speaker, you would be much better at talking about tastes than English speakers were. It seems that our cultural experiences shape what's important to us in ways, even our fundamental perception.
This is just wonderful. Lovely to learn this information. What are you going to do with this information now you've got it?
It opens up a lot of questions. So which cultural factors in particular might be important? So the fact that English speakers and Farsi speakers differ in the importance of taste and language, it suggests that it's also important culturally. So that raises the question, what is it about the cuisine or the way that we interact with food that might be leading to these differences? So lots more to explore here.
Absolutely. Asfa Majid, thank you so much for your time today. It's just been absolutely fascinating.
Thank you.
Asfa is a psychology professor at the University of York, and we've been discussing research into sensory perception and culture.